one of my favorite Aslan lines in the whole series is, "There was only one lion, but he was swift of foot."
Yeah, I love that part.
Oh, that gives me chills.
Welcome to Talking Beasts.
From NarniaWeb.com.
Where we explore the world of C.S. Lewis.
And keep a watchful eye
on the latest Narnia movie news.
This
is Talking Beasts.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back. I'm your host, Rillian.
And I'm Glumpuddle.
And we're back to not talking in the same room anymore, alas. Man, that was so much fun.
That was super fun.
Thank you for encouraging me to do that. That was so much fun. I'm a cheapskate, for those of you who don't know. I am really cheap. I mean, like, I'll just like, I don't need to eat today. I mean, you know, it's only money, right? And that's the kind of that cheapness I am.
Well, I know you're not like that because the stump question you ultimately got second place on was about food.
Oh, that's true. I'll eat anything.
I still cannot believe that happened.
Oh, that was awesome. That was awesome. But hey, you know, today you have a chance to try to redeem yourself and stump me.
Right. Now, I just thought of this one about an hour ago. But yeah, that was an awesome weekend. We had about a dozen Narnie Webbers in a rental house, and we did that Stump a Narnie Webber trivia competition, which involved a whole bunch of people behind the camera to make that happen. It takes a lot more work than you'd think. So, and I was, of course, you know, the thing about the horse and his boy is one of the big themes is humility. And I definitely learned that in the previous episode. I should have been paying a little more attention to the play, I guess. And really quick, by the way, if you haven't seen it, we did post about a 10-minute review of The Horse and His Boy stage play at the Logos Theater in Taylor, South Carolina. We did about a 10-minute video review of it, and if you want to see it, it's just go to the Narnie Web YouTube page, and it also includes a few clips from the play we have in there with special permission, so check that out.
What question did you come up with to stump me before we get into the rest of this episode, just so I can mull it over?
Yeah, let's tease it here. So, your stump question that we will get to at the end of this episode after the discussion, Rillian. At the end of The Silver Chair, Caspian and Eustace are reunited in Aslan's country. The first thing Caspian says to Eustace is a reference to something amusing that happened during one of their adventures on the Dawn Treader. What was it?
Okay, that's a good one. All right. Okay. All right.
All right. Chapter 11 of The Horse and His Boy.
So this chapter is called The Unwelcome Fellow Traveler. And in the previous chapter, I know it's been a while, but as you'll recall, our heroes made it to the edges of Arkenland.
Yeah, but we haven't done a commentary episode since like last season. So it's been several months, hasn't it?
So just to refresh your memories, we had the incredible chase with the lion. Hint, hint. Mm-hmm. Chasing our heroes, Shasta leaps off of Bree's back, runs back to confront the lion to save Gwyn and Erebus, and the Hermit of the Marshes ends up telling Shasta, you know, you need to run, always run. Shasta takes off and leaves the rest of the heroes, who are basically completely spent or wounded. So in this chapter, Shasta's running. He finally runs into King Loon, who, like the other Narnians thought, or like the Narnians back in Tashband, thinks he's Corrin. He's placed on a non-talking horse, joins the hunting party, and they all ride toward Anvard. And through the fog, if you'll recall, Shasta gets separated. He ends up almost running into Rabadash's army and hears their plans for Arkenland and Narnia. And they ride on, and Shasta is, you know, not really in command of this horse, continues through the fog, and then I'll just kind of leave that where it is, because we'll kind of just describe that in the discussion, because that's really the meat of this chapter.
Yeah, I did post a poll on the Talking Beast Facebook group a while ago where I pretty much asked, oh, we're going to be having a discussion about one of the most famous scenes in the Chronicles of Narnia, and I actually got challenged on that. Andrew posted, one of the most famous scenes? It's an interesting scene in the book, but I definitely wouldn't call it one of the most famous scenes in the Chronicles. End quote. I guess that's fair, but probably only because The Horse and His Boy is not, unfortunately, not one of the most well-known Narnia books. It's one of the most beloved by people that have read Narnia.
It's
but in
also
terms of pop
not
culture,
adapted to film. It wasn't adapted to television. It's
got a stage play recently.
It got one stage play in the United States of America.
Right, yeah.
And And I haven't even heard of another one outside of the U.S. So
Australia.
Australia had one?
One in Australia, yeah. But yeah, in terms of pop culture, I guess famous wasn't quite the right word. But to clarify, I guess, for people that love Narnia, this is one of the most memorable
not
and
beloved
moments.
Not that you don't love Narnia, Andrew.
Right?
Just
not
to say,
Andrew.
Not to hurt your feelings.
Well, again, I should not have chosen the word famous. It's more like one of the more... Among people that love Narnia and have read them a lot, you know, it's fans of the series. It's one of the most memorable, I guess, and impactful.
Well, and it's a powerful intro Aslan scene because we have
very much.
There's a number of them that really stand out. Like the Silver Chair one is, in some ways, almost more memorable than the Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe to me.
Yeah,
and I think to other people. And this is a very different one, but it's also one of the. This is an introduction to Aslan, even though we've actually encountered Aslan previously in the story.
But this is his proper introduction. It's occurring so late in the story. We're coming up on the third act here. RJ was very impacted by the scene. RJ wrote, quote, "The scene with Shasta meeting Aslan is one of the most goosebump, amazing, brilliant, amazing scenes in all of literature. I love it so much," end quote. And Nathan posted, quote, "I think it is memorable because it is an epiphany. These seemingly random things that happen throughout Shasta's life and his journey north are anything but random. As a Christian, I resonate with the idea of ordinary providence, God working in and through us in ways we often do not see or understand, especially at the time," end quote.
It's my favorite scene in the book, and it's for me, it's the most wow moment in the book. And in...
It's one of the most dramatic moments.
If I were to come up, and it has some moments that if I were to, because I was old enough when my dad first read these books that I can remember a lot of my, I'm kind of like Andrew Adamson, I don't remember like where I was or what I was doing, but I remember my emotional responses. And I remember just thinking, oh, wow. It was kind of my gut response. And even the title of the chapter gets you. And I love the title. It's mysterious.
I saw your notes about that, the title of the chapter, The Unwelcome Fellow Traveler. And I realized I've not given that title a great deal of thought. Why don't you clue me into what you think the title's all about?
What I love about the title, first of all, it gets you wondering because you think, what does this mean? If you really want to read the title and think about it. But part of it is, I've told people if I were to, you know, write a book on theology, then it would have to be something like The Unwelcome Fellow Traveler. And what I find interesting is that it's not just an unwelcome fellow traveler for Shasta. Aslan's not just the unwelcome fellow traveler in this scene. Aslan is Shasta's unwelcome fellow traveler his entire life. And this whole time, that's what Shasta starts to realize, all these instances. I mean, there are some exceptions, like the cat. He welcomed the cat. But all these times that he did not ask for Aslan to appear. And a lot of times, he certainly would have, in that moment, said he didn't want him there.
He didn't want Aslan to chase them, certainly. When Aslan was chasing away the jackals, like he was scared of the lion. He didn't want him there.
He
was unwelcome. Certainly, he didn't want it when the lion was scarring Erebus. He certainly didn't want the lion to be there. So you're right. He was pretty much unwelcome every time.
Well, and what is so interesting is what's revealed is, because a lot of the, you know, like in The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, there's some of this too, where they don't realize when they first hear that the children... don't know that Aslan's a lion when they first start hearing about him. They learned that pretty quickly, even so. But here, Shasta learns a lot about Aslan without learning what he looks like. He learns that Aslan is someone who has fought for him. He's comforted him. He has spurred him on. He's protected him. He's guided the boat that he was in as a baby. And...
all these things that seemed like just total coincidences were actually part of something.
And what I find interesting is when Shasta first meets Aslan, he's truly unwelcome. He does not want him there, but he has been the fellow traveler there his whole life. And it's interesting how he does provide Shasta with Shasta's story. The story that he gives him, it gives him meaning. It gives him a kind of a meaning going back on where he came from, because So much of, you know, when we think about what does our lives, what do our lives mean to us? So much of the time we do think about our histories and where we came from in terms of a lot of the significance to what goes on around us. Like the significance of our parental relationship that has to do with our parents and where we came from, the significance to our families or even our towns or our countries, different places we live, it has go to the history of where we came from. But also, it gives him a whole new kind of purpose going forward because he realizes these aren't just random encounters. This is actually something that someone has guided him on. And with that comes a sense of peace. But what I also love is that with that peace, Aslan asks him to trust him because there's still this huge mystery of, what about Aravis? He doesn't explain why he did what happened to Aravis. Shasta knows what happened, but he doesn't know why. And what I love here is something Lewis did a great job explaining in his books. And from what probably most of our listeners know, C.S. Lewis was a Christian apologist, originally an atheist in his life, later converted to Christianity. And it's interesting, if you read different authors in Christianity today, there are a lot who, there's kind of this interesting dichotomy sometimes between here's what you can know for certain, especially in different apologetics, and then there's this, well, wait a minute, you're not going to know everything. There's a lot of mystery in life. And I've read authors who, some become almost empiricists in that like you can prove everything. And then you have other authors who basically almost get to the point without naming names, well, you know, you can't really be certain of anything because life's just full of mysteries and you just have to embrace that mystery. But what I love is that Lewis provides an image of Aslan here that's showing here, there are things you can rest in that you can know, but you also have to trust because you can't demand every answer that you might want from me because I don't have to give it. And I'm going to tell you your story, but not everyone else's.
Stop, really, it's too much. No, seriously, like, I don't think
I mean, there's
ever
so
really
much here.
About...
I mean, that's pretty much the gist of my thoughts there, but man, I love what's revealed here.
I don't think I'd ever really thought to apply the title, The Unwelcome Fellow Traveler, to the entire book. I kind of thought of it as Aslan's walking alongside Shasta, and Shasta, of course, is afraid and wants him to go away. In this chapter, I mean, I never thought to really apply that to the entire book. That's completely in line with the theme of the book, that all these random things happen to Shasta, seemingly random things, and actually right here he's discovering that it was all part of something. Shasta, his whole life, had this sixth sense that, you know, I was made for something greater. He looks to the north and says, my father, what is beyond that hill? He knows in his bones, I'm called for something greater. We know he's a prince. Well, we find out here that he's a prince. Shortly, we're going to find out that he's a prince. But Shasta doesn't know that. The thing that resonates with me the most, I was realizing this morning about the chapter, is that Shasta finds not just a meaning or purpose in his life, but Shasta finds meaning for his sufferings. Shasta grew up not knowing his real father, and the fisherman was cruel to him. He, of course, met lions along the journey. He got mistaken for Corin, which was, you know, somewhat traumatic, even though if there were some positives of that, too. The jackals were trying to get him, and he had to cross the desert. And he, of course, was sent on to warn King Loon. And he says, I must be the most unfortunate person in the whole world. And Aslan says, no, I was the lion who orchestrated all this, basically, so that you'd be able to warn them in time and save Arkenland. So he gives Shasta's sufferings a meaning and a purpose. And C.S. Lewis, I can't remember the exact quote. He said, I think it was in The Problem of Pain. He said something about people can endure all kinds of suffering if they can find some meaning in it. And it's the apparent randomness, it's the apparent lack of meaning that makes the suffering most difficult to endure. Yeah. And I was really reflecting on the chapter this morning. Because in the past year and a half, it's gained a lot of deeper, this chapter has gained a lot deeper significance for me because my grandfather passed away a year and a half ago. And he, of course, is the one that introduced me to C.S. Lewis, introduced me to Narnia. He taught a college course on Lewis and Tolkien, wrote his dissertation on the theme of longing in the works of C.S. Lewis. And I actually just recently did a video about handwritten letters that Lewis wrote to my grandfather, and I just recently saw this for the first time. Anyway, go check out that video. It's pretty cool. But he passed away about a year and a half ago, and he was, you know, last few weeks of his life, he couldn't communicate very much. He could listen, but he couldn't talk very much. And my sister was over there and wanted to read him something, and for whatever reason, the only C.S. Lewis book around was The Horse and His Boy. Hmm. And so she read him this chapter, The Unwelcome Fellow Traveler, where, you know, Shasta's, his suffering is given meaning. And so, and when I went to his funeral, it's interesting going to a funeral for an older person. You know, my grandfather lived what we would call, you know, really a long life, you know, it's the best we can hope for. But it doesn't feel like it. You know, go to a funeral, you're kind of, there's this tension, you go to a funeral to an older person, there's this tension between, I'm sad that the loss of my grandfather, but also there's this feeling that, well, I shouldn't really be sad because he lived a long life. You know, what more can I ask for? Like, I'm going to die, really? You're going to die, really? And everyone listening to this podcast is going to die. If they live to be 90 plus, we should be, wow, you know, you lived a full life. Why doesn't it feel like that, though? It's all, in a way, it's almost easier. Like, I had a friend in high school die in a hit and run, just got killed on his bike. In a way, that's almost, going to that funeral, you can just be angry and say, we can all agree this is senseless, and this kid had his whole life in front of him, and to get killed in such a stupid, apparently random way, this is wrong, and we can all be united, and we can all agree that this is not the way things are supposed to be. When you're going to a funeral of an older person, this is what I was really wrestling with at the funeral, was it's, there's the feeling that, is this just the way it's supposed to be then? You just get old and you die, and that's just normal, but it doesn't feel that way. It's like, no, this can't be it. And so I feel like on an intellectual level, it's easy for people, when you're not experiencing suffering, it's easy to intellectualize suffering and say, well, maybe death is just a natural part of things. Death is just a part of life. Clearly, we see it all the time. It's just the way it is. But when you experience it, especially I feel like when it's the death of an older person, when it's, I guess this is just supposed to be normal, and it doesn't feel normal, though. And so I've been pondering that, and the fact that, you know, my grandfather, you know, suffered a fair amount near the end of his life, and the fact that Aslan here is talking to Shasta and saying, all the suffering you had, it served a purpose. There was a reason for it. And, like, because of the suffering Shasta endured, now he's saved Arkenland and the millions of people throughout history that are going to be positively impacted by that. And now Shasta can look at his suffering, and it doesn't make the suffering less bad, but it is like, okay, I can process that now. I know what to do with that. And I find that this scene in the book does that very powerfully. I think it's a very satisfying reveal, and all the little tiny question marks throughout the book of why are all these apparently random things happening, and where the heck is Aslan? This is the fifth Narnia book. Where is Aslan? And then he shows up and says, I've been here all along. So that's what I think of. So it's a very important chapter to me, and I think the giving meaning to Shasta's suffering is what what resonates with me the most just in the last year and a half. I think before that, it would have been more about, I would have thought of it as, oh, this is a big reveal where Shasta learns he had this higher purpose. And now I think of it as more as meaning in his suffering is what the chapter really represents to me.
A lot to ponder there. Because, yeah, I would tend to have thought about kind of your initial conclusion of, oh, this is just his Skywalker reveal, you know, like it's the meaning of his life and his destiny, and he is the one. But I think you're right, because it is in the context of, I'm the most unfortunate boy who's ever lived.
Yeah.
And
Aslan flips that around and says, actually, you're the most fortunate boy that ever lived. You know, you had this powerful line right with you the whole time.
Well, and what I like about it is, so many times ways that people, it's well-intended, they don't mean any harm by it, but the way that I think a lot of people try to alleviate suffering is, Well, just take a different perspective. You know, you're not starving in a ditch, you know, or compared to any other person who's more unfortunate. And Aslan doesn't do that. He doesn't say, well, you know, you're alive and you
could have been worse.
It could have been worse. You're alive and you made it to Arkenland. So you're not the most important. That's not what he says. He speaks directly to him and his story.
Mm-hmm. I think it's really, I see a lot of movies and stories where I feel like this sort of twist reveal is not satisfying. And I think it is here. And I think it's, I'm not sure why exactly. I guess it's, I think we've been, what you know, one of the things, the reason I think is satisfying is we've been kind of subconsciously wondering, where's Aslan? Maybe, probably when I first read the book, I'd kind of halfway through kind of gave up on wondering where Aslan was. And now it's, and the book is so weird. We talked about this in the first episode. Right. It's disorienting. It's, where are we? And Narnia is barely a part of this. It's weird seeing characters like the Pevensies as fairly minor characters.
It doesn't take place
story.
In Narnia. It's, yes, Arkenland and Dashbound. Uh-huh.
And seeing like Edmund and Susan are like fairly minor characters, like background characters. It's like, what? And why are there just like random lions? And why is no one saying, oh, a lion like Aslan? Like, why is no one, what the heck? It's almost like Lewis is writing this as book one, and then finally Aslan's like, actually, I've been here all the time. And now you go back and read it and go, oh, this fits perfectly in with the series.
Yeah, you even start to think, oh, I guess Calorman is just full of random lions. Like, you even kind of start to think that, you know, as a reader. But I think that you kind of answered your own question. You said, well, why is this satisfying and these aren't? One is because you are wondering, where is Aslan? So you're wondering, where does Aslan fit into all this? But then it's
But very organically, as a reader, I just naturally wonder that. It's not like there's a character in the story going, well, where is Aslan?
Yeah,
so
exactly.
It's this great aha moment. It just happens very organically.
But also because Aslan, his reveal to Shasta is about Shasta's... It's not about... It's very personal. It's very personal to Shasta and Shasta's meaning for his life and understanding his own suffering. Because otherwise, anyone could have said... Aha, you were, you know, born to say, you know, you, if you hadn't been taken from us, you wouldn't have been in Calorman and you wouldn't have learned about the army. And therefore, this is how you, and so someone, you could, probably almost any other story would just kind of spin it as, well, you're the chosen one.
You're right. It's very personal the way he addresses him. And by the way, I love that. Like the breathing he hears of Aslan is so softly, he wonders, like, how long have I been hearing that?
Mm-hmm.
And that's his whole life, you know? Like, Aslan was walking beside him his whole life, and he's just now noticing, to the point where he's like, maybe I've been hearing that breathing all my life, but I am just now really, like, realizing I'm hearing it.
Well,
it's
I
just
love,
the background noise.
I got to throw out this part, this line that I absolutely loved. I remember getting so much, having so much of a reaction to this line where he says, I was the lion you do not remember who pushed you, in, you know, a child near death. And
by the way, there was another line you don't remember in addition to the ones he just listed, the one who pushed that boat to shore and started the whole thing.
Yeah. And so what I love about that is that, because the reader can start, you know, readers will think, you know, they've read the other books likely. And even if they're reading it in the wrong order, but they're going to think, oh, okay, the other lions, oh, I get it. He's fitting to the story. But it goes back beyond the reader's knowledge and beyond Shasta's knowledge, kind of almost like beyond the beginning of time, like in The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. But
yeah,
so I love that part. And I remember that when that part came up, I thought, oh my goodness, from the time he was born, he knew him and remembered him.
Right. Like RJ talked about getting goosebumps from this scene. For me, one of my favorite Aslan lines in the whole series is, there was only one lion, but he was swift of foot. And that gives me chills. And I love the simplicity of, nope, there was just one. I was all of those. And the idea that he was obviously extremely swift of foot, faster than any lion possibly could. And question, Shasta finally says, who are you? And Aslan, the first thing we hear Aslan say is, one who has waited long for you to speak. So question, I guess two questions, really. Why did Aslan wait for Shasta to speak? And when Aslan says, I've waited long, does he mean, you know, the last several minutes walking in the dark, or does he mean his whole life? Do you have a take on that, on what that line means? Because honestly, I'm not totally sure either.
I think that...
Comment section, let us know.
Yeah, let us know. I think what it speaks to is, obviously, Aslan has initiated... a relationship with Shasta, and he's there. He's present, whether Shasta likes it or not. In fact, Shasta doesn't like it, but Aslan wants Shasta to engage with him. I'm sure there's much more to that, but I do think it's nothing less than that, that Aslan
there's a
does
line
want-
in the book, one of the other books, where it's, I have an idea he likes to be asked.
Yeah, from Strawberry in the Magician's Nephew.
Magician's Nephew. Was, yeah.
Yeah, they said, well, why wouldn't he just... Well, I think I have a feeling he likes to be asked. So I think it's nothing less than, even if it's much more than, Aslan likes people to engage with him.
Yeah, that makes sense. That's what we've seen of Aslan in other books. And obviously, the saying the myself three times, you know, Shasta says, you know, who are you? And Aslan says... myself three times. It has some theological implications, but it also it describes the character pretty well. First off, Aslan's kind of in his own category. I'm just myself, and the first time he says it, it's powerful and the ground is shaking.
Yeah,
the power of Aslan, the power that defeated the White Witch that created Narnia. Then he says myself and says clear and gay. This is the Aslan that started the romp with Bacchus and Silenus, or that played with the girls. Then he says, myself, very, very softly, so you can barely hear it. It almost feels like it's all around you. This is the Aslan, maybe as the albatross in Don Treader, or really the Aslan we see in a way that kind of describes him in The Horse and His Boy. He's been there all along, which Shasta's only becoming aware of it. So this is kind of the best three-word description of who Aslan is. Myself, 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 but each one getting on a different aspect of the character. We talked about in the season finale of the previous podcast, the reason Aslan's so hard to get right is because you have to get all of those different aspects of Aslan to really make him Aslan. If you just have, oh, he's a powerful, scary lion, if you just have that, but you don't have these other things, then he's not really Aslan.
Yeah, and that's why, and really, so you look at probably the biggest and most worthy complaints of any Narnia adaptation is probably going to center on how Aslan's depicted, because to be fair to all people, whether it's play scripts or movies or audio dramas, whatever it is, it's really hard to get right.
Yep. And by the way, I guess there were some positive aspects of Aslan overall, I think, in the Horse and His Boy stage adaptation at the Logos Theater. But I think we'll agree that the Unwelcome Fellow Traveler scene was one of the biggest disappointments.
It was one of the biggest disappointments, partly because we had such high expectations for it. And I also had my own ideas that I won't go into here about how, if I were doing a stage adaptation with that particular Aslan, how I would have done it. But anyway...
In general, the first half of that play was so mind-blowing, I thought.
Oh, yeah.
I was almost exhausted when the intermission hit. I almost went, oh, I don't know if I can do another hour. I'm so exhausted.
Yeah, and very visually and emotionally, highs and lows, yeah.
And then the second half, and maybe part of it was just the first half set the bar so high, but the second half comparatively had some disappointments to it. But that first half alone still made the play worth seeing, and is the reason I still give it a overall big thumbs up.
Yeah,
as
a you didn't want to read Dot's review or watch our review, go see it. It's worth it.
This scene was a disappointment, but overall, especially that first half, a solid play and a solid adaptation of The Horse and His Boy.
Yeah, very good, definitely.
All right, let's see if we can stump a Narnia Webber here. I don't know if I'm rooting for you or not, because I'm still bitter about the fact that you stole second place from me.
I don't think you're bitter. I think you're just wounded.
Pretty much.
maimed is probably better.
Look, I was pretty impressed that you knew all. I only got one in the last battle round. So look,
I don't know how you only got one. You just think of food and start rattling it off.
I way overthought it, I think. But yeah, I just totally blanked on that part of the book. So. Totally deserved it. Anyway, but this time, your question once again. At the end of The Silver Chair, Caspian and Eustace are reunited in Aslan's country. The first thing Caspian says to Eustace is a reference to something amusing that happened during one of their adventures on the Dawn Treader. What was it? What event did he reference? And I can give you it. You can blow Queen Susan's horn and ask for a hint if you want it.
Yeah. Kind of want to, but I'm just going to go all in. I think that Caspian referenced when Eustace broke his best sword on the belly of the sea serpent.
So you're saying it's when Caspian broke his best sword in the belly of the sea
Eustace
serpent. Is that
broke,
correct?
Eustace
when
broke.
Eustace.
Yeah, broke the sword in the belly of the sea serpent.
Broke which sword?
I think he said his best sword.
Is that your final answer?
That's my final answer.
That's not quite correct because it's his second best sword.
Oh, second best sword.
But I'll give it to you because I did say which adventure did they reference. And so I'll give it to you because you did reference when he broke the sword on the sea serpent.
He did say second best sword. You're right.
So the first thing Caspian said, he kind of says, Eustace, so you made it here. Then he says, what about my second best sword that you broke on the sea serpent?
That's
and it's
right.
Like, wow, it's an inside joke coming back, you know, decades later. How awesome is that?
I have to say, I actually claim the credit for the number one stump question, which was who's going to win. And I called it first. I said Dot was going to win the contest. So
that's true.
You got to watch those moderators, man. I mean, they're reading stuff, you know, they're reading the books while they're moderating pages. I mean, they take you
nerds.
By surprise.
Gosh, what do they do with their time? Jeepers. For heaven's sake, let's get to the outro here. Why don't you go ahead and take it?
Okay. You've been listening to Talking Beasts, a NarniaWeb.com podcast. If you've enjoyed this episode, please consider sharing it with a friend. And be sure to subscribe and post a comment below or in the Talking Beasts Facebook group. You can also email us at podcast@narniaweb.com, Rillian@narniaweb.com, or glumpuddle@narniaweb.com. For the latest Narnia Netflix news, visit narniaweb.com. Until next time.
That was going to be a one take, man.
I know. I'm sorry. Until next time, further up and further in.